accession number 29996, Mr. Mike Brown, Real Six. Now, so what happened next? You're under increasing mortar fire, pretty well continuous.
Yes.
What happened next?
Well, I was going out for these messages for Major Jackson at various, wherever the E Squadron was, and I said it got quite close to the house we were in. And then on the Sunday, there was a message came through that someone had been wounded in E Squadron. Would someone take a stretcher up there? So I said, well, I'll go. And somebody else came with me. And as we were going up, it was in the middle of an attack, as it were, and people all around were shuffling about and sort of hiding, and there was attack obviously going on. And when I got there, I eventually got and found the person, and they were a little bit further out in front of the regular front line, as it were, the regular lot of slit trenches. And it was, whilst I was there, there was firing going on all the time. I had a bullet, round went through my zip on my airborne smock. It went through here.
On your chest?
Yes. I mean, a fraction, it would have been in the right place as far as the Germans were concerned. It broke the zip. And eventually we got the bloke on the stretcher and started back, and then there was machine gun fire from a tank over in the, not so far away, sort of to the left. There was a tank in the woods. And I was wounded. We were all wounded. I was wounded in the leg and fell over, of course.
Did it hurt? Because it doesn't always.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it did. You know, I was walking along and suddenly I was down. I could feel it quite definitely.
So this is the Sunday. That's the 24th.
24th, yes. It was practically, I'd been there, I'd landed on the Sunday, and practically a week later, this happened.
Now, how bad a wound was it in your leg?
Well, in actual fact, it went right through here, went right through my thigh. And in actual fact, it was a very lucky wound, because it didn't really do any damage. You know, it could have fraction either way. It could have broken bones and arteries, and I don't know. But of course, I didn't know that at the time. To me, it was a... And as I was lying on the ground, I sort of put my bandage on it. And a German was approaching, sliding along the ground, as it were. And he waved to me and said, keep down. So I kept down. And I should think after about 20 minutes, as the Germans were advancing, my friend, who'd been in the line further back, he'd been captured, and as he came past me, he said to the German, could he pick me up and help me? Which he did. And we were taken back. As we went back, well, we didn't go back very far, there was this young German. I mean, I was only, 20, and he was young German. Young lad. He had a pistol, and he wanted my watch. Well, because he had a pistol, I gave him my watch. I didn't argue. And I said, oh, I want a stretcher. You know, I thought, well, I'll lay it on. Well, I could hobble with Brian's help. And we were taken back to a hut in the wood where, funnily enough, a few days before, had been, E Squadron had been there. And anyhow, it was now a first aid place, and the German doctor there sort of ripped my trousers open, cut them open, and bound my leg up properly, you see. And then
so
you
were reasonably treated, except for the
you can't you can't say anything. And then he said, right, you've got to walk that direction. So two or three Germans that had also been wounded, and my friend and I, we hobbled off to where we were told, and we sat by this tree where there was a road, a track, and eventually one of our jeeps came along, driven by a German, and we were put on there and taken to their first aid post, the next place. It was one of the houses we'd passed as we'd walked from Wolfhager. When we got there, I seem to remember, now whether I made this up, I don't know, somebody coming out as we got there, one of the Germans coming out with a boot which had a leg in it and tossing it on a heap. I feel shy. I don't know whether I made that up, but you know, I begin to think, well, is that likely? But anyhow, we got in, the place was full of Germans, and I was the only English person in there. They had beds and cots and things in there, and I just sat there, or I stood for a while, and in the end I was so tired, I had to sit. I sat on the corner of a bed. And whilst I was there, somebody came, and English, well, actually it was one of our officers, came and said, anybody there speak English? And he brought in a young paratrooper that had been wounded in the fingers and the eyes. What he'd been doing, he'd been catching grenades and throwing them back, and of course one had landed and blasted him all over the place, and he couldn't see. He was all bandaged up, and said, can someone look after him? So I looked after him, and later on we were put in a car with two Germans, he and I, and taken to Ada.
To where?
Ede, I think it is. It's a town or a village not very far away. And there was a Red Cross nursing place, Dutch Red Cross nursing place. They didn't actually do anything to us. They just looked after us. We laid on the bed, on the cot sort of thing. They were very interested in the Dutch royal family, of course. And in later that evening, a bus came full of German wounded, and it had we got on it, and of course we were the last to get on. We got sent right to the back, and at the back they had one of these trailers, because I think it was a gas or a charcoal driven bus, and it chugged along and took us eventually to Apeldoorn, to Queen Wilhelmina's summer palace. I was told it was a palace, no doubt about it. Where
what was happening there?
Well, this was a hospital, German hospital, really. I mean, there was a long corridor there as we got into the room, into the building. It was a long corridor there, and of course it was full of Germans waiting to be treated, wounded. We, of course, were at the back, the end, as it were. And we hung on there for a long time, and eventually we had a shower. And I had to help wash this bloke. And then we were taken upstairs where there was a large landing with armchairs all around. And I remember sitting in there, and I nodded off. And when I woke up, I was the only person there. I was taken in to the doctor, where he fiddled with my leg, the surgeon or whatever. What he did, he put a tube in it. I didn't know what he was doing. It wasn't till later I found out I got a tube in my leg for draining it. And then I was put into a room, which was obviously, I would think, a dressing room. You know, I think there were two three-tiered bunk beds in there. And one of the people in there was an Army Service Corps person that had been on the resupply missions. I can't remember the others. But the toilet was something to behold. It was, if you could get it nowadays on the Antique Roadshow, it'd be worth a fortune. The bowl was a blue and white, magnificently decorated thing. And everything, it was all beautifully wooden cased, you know, all around it. Nothing very much happened there. My leg had been, had this tube put in, and my leg was put in a splint. I had a long metal thing on my leg.
And how was it?
Well, I can't remember now, but it did
not cause you
it wasn't painful. And I can't remember. Well, whatever it says there, when I moved.
Now, you seem to have entrained, about the 1st or 2nd of October.
Yes. Well, I was there until then, and then we were taken down to the train. Presumably Appledorn. We were put in a coach and taken there, loaded onto a cattle wagon.
Now, what were conditions like in a train journey? You were going to Fellingbottle.
Fellingbottle, that's right. Well, all we had, of course, was straw on the floor. Everybody in there had been wounded somewhere or other. And
how bad was it? Were conditions?
Well, they weren't very nice. The real trouble was, whilst we waited for a long time in the stage, in the train before we set off, was the train was being assembled, and they used to shunt the carriages around. And what used to happen is a train, I don't know whether you've been anywhere near shunting things, they stop one end and it goes all down, you're lying there waiting, go dum 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 all the way down, and you go, oh! And of course everyone was a bit jumpy and goodness knows what else. That was terrible. We lay there and I think we got bread or something, a loaf of bread, German black bread, I don't remember anything else. I remember when we wanted, before we left, we wanted to go to the toilet. We were allowed out. And of course, we just went across the tracks. Trouble was my leg. By this time, they'd taken my splint away, but I still couldn't bend my leg much. And I had a job to get up over the railway line. But somebody helped me, and we managed. And eventually, we started off. Now, the first night we were travelling, one party was going very slowly, and suddenly there was a rat-tat-tat of a machine gun and shouting, and goodness knows what else, and the train came to a halt. Obviously someone had been trying to escape, you see. People in our carriage, everyone, I think, nearly every truck, you know, everyone was thinking of lifting the floorboards to get out. And then there were a lot of shouting and shooting and dashing about. And then near us there was someone groaning. You know, you could hear them groaning. And then there was a little bit of talking, and then suddenly there was a shot, and there was no more groaning. So I would imagine that person had been shot. We don't know, obviously. Now, the train, of course, was stopped. The sergeant major, whatever it was, you know, German, came round, opening all the truck doors to see, you know, how many had escaped and if you were all there. Presumably, the number who were in our truck was chalked on the outside. And he said, yeah, well, we don't want any more escapes. And he said, if there's any more escaping, 1 in 10 of you will be shot. Now, this is a funny thing. So, immediately, I started counting round from the door to see if I was number 10. I wasn't. And I thought, oh, he might go the other way round. And then, of course, I said, how daft is that? And I wasn't the only person that did that. Afterwards, you know, it came out that one or two of us had tried to work out whether we were the tenth man around there. Anyhow, after that, there were no more escapes. We just carried on to Falling Bostel.
How long did it take? It seems to have taken 4 days.
Well, yes, it did. It was a long time.
You're not sure of...
Well, I got those dates, and I think I would say those dates. It wasn't several days.
Now, so did things get worse during the journey, the conditions? And what about toilets?
I don't remember getting out at all during the journey. I don't remember that at all. Presumably we went in a corner, but I cannot remember.
Now, what happened when you got to Fellenbostel? What was it, Fellenbostel? What was that?
Well, we found out was a very large receiving camp for POWs. Massive place. And we got out there, and people marched off. Well, of course, I couldn't march very quickly or go very quickly. I met a friend there, someone I'd known in E Squadron, when we got out, and he and I walked up together. And I do remember as we went past some of these wagons, it's something we talked about afterwards quite a lot. In one of them, someone had left half a loaf of bread. And later on, I mean, a lot of us saw that. And later on, a lot of us said, "Oh, we could have done do with that bit of bread now." And we got to Falling Bostel. We went up.
Is this Dulag Luft or whatever it's called?
No.
Dulag Luft?
No. This was just Stalag 11.
It doesn't say.
Stalag 11B. Here, it's on the map. It's Stalag 11B.
Right, okay.
I think I underlined Stalag 11 up on the left.
Right.
Stalag 11B.
Fellenbostel, Stalag 11B. Right.
That's
so,
it.
Right. What was the camp like?
Well, we went in and we were processed, as it were. There were a row of tables, and you had to go in between these tables, and they would, more or less, Germans would search you. We were then marched to the...
Anything else they did, induction?
No, not then. Sometime we got a number and identity disc, which I got in there. I can't remember when. We went to our compound, and I remember marching down or going down towards a compound. We passed other compound, and they were full of airborne troops. I didn't know there were so many airborne troops. I didn't know all those people had been captured, you see. We got to this hut. We were then, we sorted out where we were going to sleep there.
Now, what were the huts like at Fellenbostel?
Well, they were just army huts. I don't think there was anything very much. There were three-tier bunks everywhere.
How many in a hut then?
A lot. It was jumble. It wasn't two down either side, you know, in a tidy way. It was just a jumble, as far as I could remember. And I remember I went out to the toilet, which I believe there was a hole in the ground with a bar across. I can't really imagine that now, because that camp was there for a long time. But anyhow, I went out there. When I was coming back, American Air Force were going over, you see, and there was an air raid. And a German in the next compound was saying, shouting and shouting. So I gathered he meant me to go in. So I did go in. This was sort of the back entrance. At the front entrance, they'd had this same trouble. Glider pilot, prisoners were out there and they were told to go in. No one had told us we weren't supposed to be out during an air raid. And actually, one of our glider pilots was shot on the first day and killed. We learned then that you weren't supposed to be out when there was an air raid going on. Not that we could do anything. We were all really out there shouting, thinking, gosh, they're going to be home for breakfast.
Do you know his name, the pilot of the shot? Or
Holdsworth or someone, I think it was. It's in one of our magazines.
So what happened next then?
Well, we spent that sort of week or whatever it is there trying to get acclimatized. I remember a padre coming round, seemed a young padre coming round, and said, one of the things you've got to do, he'd been captured at Dunkirk, one of the things you've got to do, he said, is don't put off doing anything. Do it. I remember him saying that, because you'll put things off forever. You know, gave us, tried to encourage us a bit. We were given food and soup, as far as I can remember. That's the only, and brown bread. I don't really remember much else. They were one of the people in charge of the sort of senior British person there, as far as we were concerned, was a RSM Lord. I think he was in, he'd been a guardsman, pre-war guardsman, and he was had been with one of the parachute battalion.
And what was RSM Lord like?
A guard sergeant major, and you couldn't have had a better. He got some decoration for being doing what he did at that camp. Because I believe when they were eventually liberated there, he had a sort of guard of honour all dressed up in their best uniform. So they'd say. And I can imagine it. He was well known. I think he eventually went to be RSM at Sandhurst after
was
the war.
Was he popular?
I can't remember. I wasn't there long enough for
you
that.
You were only there about 6, 7 days.
Yes, weren't there.
27, so a month, 20 days, yeah.
Was it? Yeah, I don't really know, and I didn't obviously have much to do with him.
Now, anything happened while you were there? How was your leg?
My leg, I went to get it looked at in the sick place, and that is when I was told I'd got a tube in it, and that's why I couldn't walk properly. And, I mean, it was only medical orderly, one of the airborne medical orderlies, and they couldn't do anything for it, except they pulled a little bit out every couple of days, this tube, and all they could put on was this aquaflavin disinfectant. I mean, we had nothing else, you see.
Was anything happening while you were there, or?
No, I don't think anything that I can remember now. We were just there for those...
Well, 3 weeks or so.
3 weeks, yes.
Now, what happened at the end of that time?
We were then put on a train, another carriage, cattle wagon, for Sargon. We didn't know where we were going. Somebody said on the journey that we were going through Berlin, or the outskirts of Berlin, which is possible. How they knew, I don't know, but somebody always knows something, don't they?
Now, which camp were you going to? Because there's a couple there now by this time. Which one were you in?
We were going to 8B, Stalag 8B, which was next to Stalag Luft 3, where the RAF, which was an RAF one, and it was where all those escapees were shot, those 50 escapees were shot. That was just down the road, in a wooded area it was.
Now, but that was in March or April. Now, what was your reception when you got to Sargon? You seem to have got there on the 30th? Yeah, 30th.
Well, we were just marched in. I remember as we were going in, we saw a great big pile of rusty tin cans, and we thought, cool, that's good, we might get a Red Cross parcel. We were put into these huts, which were brick built, brick floors, and in the middle of each block there was the washing facility, which was really a sort of counter, and on top there was a trough at eye height. There was a trough with holes every so far along. And what they used to do, they used to pour, instead of having taps, they poured water in this trough a couple of times a day. And it came out at the holes, you see, and you had to go there to catch the whatever water you wanted. On the brick floors were slats of wood or planks of wood. There were no beds or anything, and these were sort of for lying on, just planks of wood, rather like a fence that had been, you know, had been laid down, and we just laid on those. All they did was lift you off the floor. And
now, what about food? What food did you get there?
Well, we used to get. We had one soup a day, and then we'd get bread. Our bread ration was one loaf between six people. The bread business was very, the division and the cutting of it was very important. Everybody watched. And the bread was perhaps first cut into three pieces, and then one from each pair would go and decide which was the best looking piece. And you'd pick that. And then, of course, it would be cut again. And then again, you'd have to decide, either by tossing a coin or whatever, which piece of bread it was you were going to have. We were, you know, each crumb was very important, even at that stage. And, of course, it got worse and worse.
And what other food did you get during the day?
Well, sometimes we got a bit of cheese. Sometimes we got a little bit of butter, but it wasn't real butter because it never froze. I don't know what it was. Sometimes we had sauerkraut. I don't really remember. Potatoes were very important. Sometimes we got potatoes, and sometimes we got them in the soup. But the soup was very watery, generally. We didn't have a lot to eat. And what I didn't know then, I mean, earlier on in the war, walking down Oxford Street, I think it was Butlin's shop or something had been taken over by the Red Cross. And in there were Red Cross parcels, please give money for. I remember looking at that and thinking, gosh, I could manage on that well. And of course, all the time I was there, I never got one Red Cross parcel to myself for a week.
Now tell me about the Red Cross. How were they issued?
The Germans decided when they would be issued. Now, sometimes they had them in store, I think, and just didn't want to issue them. And it said on that list there, sometimes we got half a Red Cross parcel, sometimes it was a quarter, and that sort of thing. But never once did we get a complete Red Cross parcel.
And what was in the Red Cross parcels?
Oh, there was condensed milk. There was fruit, some form of cake, I think. Jam, sugar, tea, coffee, condensed milk, or the Canadian Red Cross parcel had powdered milk in it. There was actually, if you got one of those a week, you could live quite well. Food-wise.
But you didn't.
But we never did. And we had to have the other. You know, the German supplement was, we had to have that.